Recorded live from the Phantasmo Lounge, high atop the Jim Steranko building in beautiful Midtown Portsmouth, Virginia, it's Phantasmo After Dark with your host, Rob Floyd, and special guest co-host, Professor Sam Batman.
Yay!
Tonight's topic, part three of our superhero extravaganza. Yeah, hey, we're talking about superhero movies and superheroes on the silver screen and the small screen and why they change things, generally giving a big overview and a lot of tangents on stuff. So if you hadn't listened to the first two episodes, you might wanna, because we're up in the early 90s at this point. We started in the 40s and a lot of good stuff.
Have to pick up the tempo a little bit because we've still got 20 years to cover.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll stop going off on griping tangents. And
Well,
but it's good stuff. It's good stuff.
It's great stuff.
But but last time, let's see. I think we left off last time. We were in the middle of the Schumacher Batman era, and we talked about the Shadow, and the Rocketeer was one in there somewhere that was just a really good movie. I thought.
Beautiful, beautiful movie.
Yeah. And
one of the brilliant things about The Rocketeer, of course, is you come to the movie because it's a fresh character. He doesn't have a lot of baggage.
Yeah.
So you can't have a lot of fanboy griping about, well, they got this wrong. They got that wrong. Pretty true to the whole concept.
Yeah.
And that's a testament to how strong the character was for Dave Stevens in the first place.
Oh, yeah. And also the setting of it being back in what? It was back in the 40s? Late 30s, early 40s?
Late 30s, early 40s, yeah.
Yeah, that really helps sell the fantasy element of it, because it is like, I mean, even though it was a real time, to us it's history, it's fantasy, because we didn't live it, and it helps sell the characters, just like X-Men First Class in the 60s worked a hell of a lot better, I think, than the modern-day X-Men films. But yeah, Rocketeer's one I could just watch over and over again. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's great. And, you know, you can't actually build a jetpack like that without burning your ass off.
Exactly.
But that doesn't matter, because I bought into it for the movie. I know someone who said, you know, I was really enjoying the whole thing until they got to that critical plot point where Howard Hughes has that film that shows, you know, if the Nazis got the jetpack, they would become streaming out of Europe as jet-powered stormtroopers.
Yeah.
And that just ruined the whole movie for me. I'm like, really? Because that's like a central plot point. That's all we have to stop them.
Yeah.
Well, it was just stupid. Really? This is the same person who said, yeah, I liked Back to the Future until the end when Marty got on stage and made a fool of him.
What?
Suspension of disbelief works differently for different people.
So you could buy the time travel, but you couldn't buy the playing guitar.
I'll go you one better. Spider-Man 2. Spider-Man 2 is a great movie up until the end when Mary Jane runs out on her own wedding. Spoiler. Because nobody runs across New York City in a wedding dress. Well, what about the guy with the mechanical arms picked up for a cab?
So you bought the radioactive spider bit. You bought the guy climbing the walls. You bought the guy with the mechanical arms. You're not buying a chick running out on a wedding. Like, have you ever been with a girl, son? Have you ever seen a romantic or a Hallmark movie or romantic comedy or anything that happens in all the time? You know?
Oh, suspension of disbelief is a finely tuned machine. It doesn't work the same for everybody.
Man. Oh, jeez. Oh. So that was your problem. Okay.
Yeah.
Man, so we got the Rocketeer, and along in there, let's see, the Schumacher Batman films come up and just totally kill the Bat franchise by pretty much turning it into a neon version of the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And not as smart as the 60s show was about it, really, because it's still trying to play it like it's cool and serious, and even though it's just totally over the top and ridiculous. And the less said about those films, the better.
Yes.
You know, but some people I run into say that Val Kilmer was their favorite Batman. And I'm like, are you on drugs?
I've heard that. I don't want to watch Batman Forever a second time to really fairly judge Val Kilmer. So I'll just say, hey, if that's what works for you, fine.
Right on.
I think I like George Clooney as an actor. I thought in From Dusk Till Dawn, he was great. Tarantino and Rodriguez made him an awesome, awesome guy.
Oh, yeah.
And then he shows up in Batman and Robin with that freaky, basically chrome-plated bat nipple thing. And I'm going, what in hell is this?
Yeah, you know, I've always said, Clooney, yeah, he's too good an actor for that script that he was given. And I would like to have seen him given a chance with a good Batman script.
Yes.
Because he's a good actor, and he mm-hmm. looks good, and he's got the jaw that looks... He looked great in the cowl, but the movie was so ridiculous.
If you look at Clooney's serious role, Syriana, or uh-huh. Three Kings, even, which is not really a serious movie, it's got comedic moments, but
yeah.
Okay, movies like that, he projects the image that you would want to see as the Batman, or yeah. any kind of superhero character, for that matter. And you go, well, that's probably why he got picked. And then they give him this shit-tastic script that says, oh, well, now that you've signed a contract, George, fuck you.
Yeah, click your heels and some skates are going to pop out.
It's the MasterCard.
Yeah, oh,
it's
yeah.
the MasterCard that ruins it for me.
Oh, that was the equivalent of bat shark repellent right there.
Well, how do you get a credit card issued in your superhero name?
Yeah.
Without basically compromising your secret identity.
Yeah, that was the wah-wah moment, you know?
Oh.
Okay, but beyond those, okay, because we're done with those.
All right, do you want to talk about Spawn? Do you want to talk about
Spawn?
Steel?
I don't want to talk about Steel.
Well, then let's jump up to Blade.
Okay, now right there, Spawn, okay, well, let's talk about Spawn for just a second.
Okay.
Spawn was pretty good. I wasn't that fond of the character. I didn't, you know, I mean, I bought the first 10 issues or so, and it was all right, but it didn't blow me away. I wasn't that wrapped up in it. So the movie was like, it was okay, you know?
Well, I tell you, I have trouble accepting a character like Spawn as a superhero, and I know this is going to step close to your toes, so I apologize, Rob, but to me, he's from the same vein as a character like Son of Satan.
Yeah.
Or Ghost Rider, and these are okay, supernatural and magical characters who don't really fit the traditional superhero mold, even if going to go out there and evil. So,
well, they're like anti-heroes. They're not really superheroes. They're doing good through kind of a misfortunate series of events that put them in this situation.
Yeah. So you know, I was a mixed bag. It's like, okay, I don't really know the character. I get what's going on here. I don't really understand the whole clown deal, you know, as a character, not as a...
Yeah.
But I'll roll with it, and I thought as a self-contained little story, Spawn was not bad.
Yeah, yeah, it was, from what I can recall, because I've only seen it the one time, it was pretty faithful to the book, you know, mm-hmm. and if it does that and still, you know, and works, okay, it worked, then it worked in my book. After that, what are we up to then? We're
well, in 98, you've got Blade.
Yeah.
If you don't want to talk about Blade as, again, not a superhero, and do you want to talk about Mystery Men?
Well, actually, we got to talk about Blade, though, because that was actually what I brought up, I think, in the first episode.
Okay.
Like 4 weeks ago now. Okay. If anybody that's listening to this now or longer, that was the first Marvel movie to make it big.
Yes.
And to really do good box office wise and reputation wise, you know, the word of mouth, people love the movie. It spawned mm-hmm. two sequels, which were less than the original. But the first one, even though it did change the look completely from the comic, which the look mm-hmm. in the comic was really a 70s look, which I get why they changed it, because it probably wouldn't have worked as well on screen.
Right.
And it would have been really dated looking because mm-hmm. he wore like a brown leather shaft coat or something and green pants, or it was like an army jacket. And
I want to say he was in a turtleneck.
It might have been. I know he had the big coat, though, so that might have been under the coat. But mostly he was in the black and white, I think, Dracula magazine, the backup feature. And he mm-hmm. made some color appearances in the comics now and again. But and he wore these goggles and had wooden yes. throwing knives, because, you know, that was kind of cool, wooden stakes.
Sure.
They did away with that in the movie. He had silver, which I don't remember when silver came about to kill vampires, but I don't remember that from being a kid watching vampire movies.
I don't either. I know that it The first time I ran into it was when my wife got me to watch True Blood on HBO, and she's like, oh, you know, silver weakens these vampires. And I'm like, the hell?
No, that's werewolves.
It says what?
You know, stake through the heart kills a vampire, but stake through the heart and kill anybody.
Again, like in From Dusk Till Dawn, when Tom Savini said, silver, I know that's werewolves, but is it harm vampires? And Julie Lewis, does anybody have any silver? Okay.
Moving on. Yeah. Yeah. But Blade, you know, with the changes they made, and they could really change a lot because he wasn't a well-known iconic character, you know, and you can get away with changing more that way. At least for my money, you can. And
just like what I said about The Rocketeer, same principle. You don't have a lot of baggage to bring to the film because nobody knows.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, but still Blade was still pretty much the character. He was, you know, part vampire from a human mother, vampire father, and he was hunting down vampires, full-blood vampires. Yes. And he had the black leather outfit and trench coat, which is so cool to everybody. You know, so, and that was, as far as Marvel movies go, that was pretty important okay, we can make this stuff work for a bigger audience now.
Yeah.
But after Blade, what comes after Blade?
Well, the very next year you had Mystery Men based on the Dark Horse spin-off characters from The Flaming Carriage.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that was a fun movie. I never read the book, so I don't know how close it was. But
it's not everybody's cup of tea, but again, these unknown characters don't bring a lot of baggage to the screen because they don't have that much backstory. And the selling point for that was these are blue-collar superheroes.
Uh-huh.
Okay? So in a way, it was like flipping the bird to all the studios who had taken the high-profile heroes trying to dumb them down through realism.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, because it said, look, this guy doesn't have a costume in the first place. He can't afford a super suit.
Yeah.
So, Stiller's Mr. Furious. He had a leather jacket, and then over that he wore another leather overcoat, and he had some, Triumph motorcycle that he could barely keep running?
Yeah.
And William H. Macy is the shoveler, and he's, you know, part of his costume is a chest protector that he has to give back to his son for a softball practice.
Yeah, and like a miner's helmet with the light on it.
And so, on the one hand, you're like, well, this is just stupid. But again, if you can suspend disbelief, it's like, these are guys with no special powers who said, I want to make a difference.
Yeah.
So that it's a very clumsy and goofy weapon. But within the context of the movie, they are superheroes.
Yeah.
They're blown up by a legit superhero, Captain Amazing, until they accidentally kill him and have to save the day. Spoiler! But for what it is, I think Mystery Men is a really fun movie.
Oh, it is. It's fun. It's a great cast of folks in it.
And if you come to it expecting the kind of serious tone, I mean, if you come to it right out of Schumacher's Batman films, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
But if you come to it right before X-Men, which came the next year, Bryan Singer's X-Men movie, it doesn't work. So it to me, Mystery Men is one of those movies kind of like Schwarzenegger's last action hero that's before its time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, if Mystery Men came out now, people would go, oh, ha-ha. You know, that's not too different from Deadpool. That's, ah.
Yeah, yeah, but it would work better.
Back then, yeah.
It was another case of being too smart for the room.
Exactly.
You know. Now you're saying that the next year we got X-Men, if Blade came out when it came out, if that was the one that got the suits going, maybe we can do something here. Maybe we can make these comic book movies work again. Then X-Men, bam, yes, you can do anything now.
Absolutely.
Because that was the movie, that and Avengers were two movies that they said could never be made. You know, could never be made because it's just too much going on, too many characters, you know, and too much special effects. And X-Men, for all its flaws and for as much about it that I don't like, which would fill a whole episode, there's some good stuff in it. And it really, it gave the foothold to get more, to get the Marvel Universe going of movies that we have now. You could argue between that and Iron Man, but this really opened the door for more to come.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest problems with it for me is how much they changed. as far as... Now, they did keep a lot of cool stuff the same. Patrick Stewart as Professor X, well, duh. Couldn't have cast anybody better. You know, when he was doing Star Trek, people were like, that guy's gonna, it could be Professor X. My biggest problem is the leather motorcycle outfits.
Mm-hmm.
And people are going to hate me for this, but Hugh Jackman as Wolverine.
I knew you were coming to that because I was looking at something to
like
the argument.
Yeah, I like Hugh Jackman. You know, I like him as a dude in interviews. I like most of what he does with Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the stuff I don't like about it is actually the script and not him. Well, one, if you want to get super nitpicky about it, okay, yada, yada, yada. He's way too tall for Wolverine. He's not hairy like Wolverine. It looks like he shaves his chest, yada, yada, yada. Okay, I can get past that stuff. The biggest part about it that I don't like is every friggin' movie, he cries. As Wolverine, he shows emotion, a lot of emotion, and cries. Wolverine has always been written in the comics. He's Clint Eastwood.
Mm-hmm.
He's a 5'5" Clint Eastwood that has metal bones. You know, can heal. That's how he should be played, like Charles Bronson or Clint Eastwood.
Okay.
You know, not this super tough guy, but he's got a soft side. And he cries over Jean Grey or cries over something. To me, I get totally taken out of the movie and the character when that happens.
Yeah, X-Men came out in 2000. Fellowship of the Ring came out in 2001. I don't know what kind of budget Singer had versus Jackson,
mm-hmm.
but if you can make hobbits look small next to Gandalf, you could have made Wolverine look a little bit shorter. Okay?
Yeah. But, you know, Singer,
the crying thing,
Singer doesn't like superheroes, though, either. One of the things he said in one of the interviews, they were asking him about Wolverine or Wolverine's costume or, you know, the mask. And he says, oh, no, they're not going to wear masks. Masks look silly. Okay, you don't understand your material then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't understand where these characters are coming from, who they are, or why they look that way. You know, masks don't look silly. Man, that's the character's face. Sorry. But it is, you know. That's Wolverine's face with that mask on. Without the mask, it's Logan.
Yeah.
You know, it's Steve Rogers without the mask. With the mask, it's Captain America. It's Iron Man with the helmet on. Without the helmet, it's Tony Stark in an armor suit. You know, it's just, that's just the way it is.
Okay, let me just jump in here. We've talked about, you know, the lack of a moral center, you know, because everything's shades of gray.
Yeah.
And here again, it's like, well, we don't understand why they wear costumes. Okay. Whether it's the costume is a symbol. Okay, that's why some of them are bright and colorful.
Yeah.
The realistic version is why they're bright and colorful. You know, the legit reason is because of the coloring process in comics. And if your superhero wears red and blue, then all of his villains are going to wear orange and green.
Yeah.
Because of the color wheel.
Uh-huh.
But it's either theatrical, or it's inspirational, or it's a distraction, or in a team book like Fantastic Four and X-Men, it's a uniform.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. All these legitimate reasons within the context of the movie, the context of the characters, why they wear the costume. Otherwise, why not have everybody wear jeans and t-shirts?
Yeah, exactly.
So when you basically say to your audience, okay, we're going to take away the code name, we're going to take away the costume,
mm-hmm.
we're going to take away the symbology, we're going to take away all this stuff, why don't you just then give us a movie that's, you know, your standard 80s action film with Stallone or Schwarzenegger, okay? I'm not knocking those. It's just that, you know, what kind of movie do you guys want to make?
Yeah, right? They want to cash in on the name value
mm-hmm.
of Marvel and X-Men,
mm-hmm.
but they feel silly about making them look like the X-Men.
Exactly.
I don't get it. And I'm sorry, the unifying leather biker jumpsuits look kind of ridiculous, you know, because you can't move in leather like that. I wear leather jackets. They're not, you don't get the greatest mobility, you know, and a whole leather suit. And like I think I was saying off recording to you, you look at the extras on the first X-Men movie disc, the scene where they're hopping over the little small wall at the Statue of Liberty. The outtakes, Hugh Jackman can't raise his leg up high enough in the leather suit because it hasn't been stretched out or whatever, and he falls trying to get over that wall. So to fight in something like that is not practical. And then they try, if you look, there's subtle little things on them that make them look different from each other. You know, there's like piping. They're real fond of in the comics for a while, maybe even now, in a lot of the movies, of like seams and piping instead of solid colors for stuff. But yeah, the trend with the piping and all in the comics, and like I said, in comics and in the movies, where you look at the leather jumpsuits on the X-Men, they look like they're the same thing. But when you get up close, you see that there's a pipe, you know, an outlined X that looks different on Wolverines than it does on Cyclops. And the piping on Wolverines, he's got two little claws outlined that you can't really tell on his sides that are, and his is orange piping and Cyclops is blue piping and Storm's is gray or something like that. Why even do that if it's not going to show up and you're not going to see it and be in your face? You know, it's ridiculous.
I'm going to say that is a big fuck you to cosplayers. You guys are trying to get this right. Well, good luck, because we're not going to publish any high def pictures.
Yeah, but you know something? People damn well do it.
Yes, they do.
I've seen them do it, and that to me, that's turning the fuck you back to Hollywood. Like, we can do this.
Well, my question is, you look at the actual comic costumes.
Uh huh.
Don't the biker suits have a lot more X stuff on them? In terms of like, we're going to put little tiny X's on your belt buckle and on your chest.
Oh, yeah, and on the shoulders and,
Yeah, so it's uniformity through patches. And it's, what?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I don't get that.
You know, and the other stuff they change in those movies, let's see. What are the relationships between the characters? They, instead of having Kitty Pryde and Wolverine be close, they had Rogue be the Kitty Pryde character in the first X-Men movie, pretty much.
Yes.
Which, okay, whatever. I'll give them that. It's just a whatever they decide. Why ever they decided to use that character instead of the other one. It's because the ending, I guess, where she has to take the power away.
I can't complain about the continuity of these movies, given what Claremont actually did in the comics. But you know, it's like, okay, we're going to make an X-Men movie. Well, are you guys going to start with the core team: Cyclops, Beast, Angel, Iceman? No, because Wolverine will sell tickets.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to start with the new X-Men.
Okay, so you're going to start with the new X-Men. Yeah, but we're going to keep around. We're not going to get Colossus, and we're not going to get Nightcrawler until the second film. Okay. Are we going to get, you know, this? No, but we're going to get, it's a mix and match. And okay, fine, whatever. You know, whatever you think will sell tickets, because that's the ultimate goal, put butts in the seat and make money. But it's kind of a hodgepodge.
Yeah.
And then they carried it through the rest of the movies, you know, so it's all over the place.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I can give them that. I'll get away. Okay, we're picking from the whole timeline of X-Men, we're going to pick certain characters we think will work for this movie for different reasons. Okay, I'll give them that, you know.
Sure.
But they, again, if you can't tell at a glance who they are, and it's like they were afraid to get Wolverine's hair to look like Wolverine's hair. Sometimes it kind of did, sometimes it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I've seen people do it at conventions, and it doesn't look silly. You look over there and go, that's Wolverine, you know. So if they can do it in a convention to walk around all day, why couldn't they, big budget Hollywood, do it in the movies? And
I don't know.
And without saying, it'll look silly. No, it'll look like Wolverine. Without
fans, fans love the concept, and the suits don't.
Yeah.
What I'm going to go with.
Yeah, and that's about it. So going on, because we can get on that for a long time, but going on, the second X-Men movie comes out. I really don't remember a whole lot about it, except Nightcrawler was in it. And the villains teamed up with the heroes and against another villain. And then the third movie comes out, and it has a Schumacher syndrome where too much in one movie, and you have three separate major storylines from the X-Men comics in one movie. It could have been, if they were smart, it could have been three more movies.
Yes. Well, we may have, we'd be counting on this gravy train too much. If it's going to crash, let's just get everything out of the way in the last movie.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but then you poison the well and you ruin it for everybody. Spider-Man 3, same thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I would have preferred to see Sandman and Sandman alone, or if he has to team up with somebody, give him the Vulture.
Yeah.
Or give him Electro, give him one of the other Sinister Six. Screw Venom. Who's Venom? people half my age.
Yeah.
People half my age are like, oh, well, Venom would have been the best thing, and they should have got rid of Sandman.
And if you want to do Venom justice, that's a whole movie by himself.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, not shoehorning it into the Sandman story, you know, does a disservice to both the characters.
Mm-hmm.
But neither one of them getting enough build up or screen time. And then adding the, the Harry Osborn Green Goblin skater punk to it was ridiculous.
Yeah. He had three villains. And it's just, it's overkill and not the type.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it got Schumacher.
The thing is, you look at that and you go, all right, Batman didn't work with multiple villains. Spider-Man didn't work with multiple villains. X-Men didn't work with multiple villains. But a team movie like Avengers did work with multiple heroes. So somebody obviously knew what they were doing, and it wasn't the guys that did Batman, Spider-Man, and X-Men.
Yeah.
But when we get to the second X-Men movie, I have to say that that's also the year for the Affleck Daredevil and Ang Lee's Hulk.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. Which Ang Lee's Hulk, some people really liked it. To me, it was just kind of forgettable.
I think visually, it was wonderful. There are a lot of things in terms of how that film looks, with various split-screen techniques and the fact that it's the Hulk.
That was cool. Angrier, yes, that part was
larger.
Cool. Yeah.
Now, story-wise, I don't get why Bruce's dad also had to be the Absorbing Man and Zax.
Yeah,
but
exactly. I said the same thing.
And the Hulk dogs, although they make kind of an important point, they're really not necessary.
Yeah.
But the scenes in the desert and the Hulk fighting the army.
That was cool.
All that stuff is just wonderful.
That was cool,
wonderful
yeah.
Stuff. So there's things to recommend. And now people will say, yeah, you just got to. That's why they started over with the Incredible Hulk movie in 2008. And I'm like, if you squint, then the Incredible Hulk is a direct sequel to Hulk. And if you don't, then Hulk doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But, you know, Ang Lee's movie ends with Bruce Banner in Central America, and the follow-on movie opens with Banner in Brazil.
Yeah.
So you can squint and make it work, and any inconsistencies between the two movies is a disinformation campaign by the United States government to downplay the fact that they directly contributed to unleashing this monster on the population.
And there you have it. I'll buy that.
There you
go. I'll buy that for a dollar.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
When are we can Daredevil? We're talking about
yeah,
Affleck
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Affleck is Daredevil. once again, miscast, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
The Daredevil suit didn't look bad when he had it zipped all the way up, the jacket. It didn't look bad there. The mask was kind of goofy in the fact that where it comes up over his nose, it almost came up between his eyes. So you could show as much of Affleck's face as possible and keep the mask on.
Uh-huh.
Elektra in that, what a waste.
Yeah.
Bullseye, what a waste.
Yeah.
Michael Clark Duncan as the Kingpin. Okay, they changed the character's ethnicity. You know, we've stated in another episode how I think it's insulting to the ethnicity to change them, and that's a whole other thing I don't want to go into again.
Right.
But the fact that the character just wasn't black to begin with, and they changed him black just for the sake of doing it, some people argue, well, maybe they just, you know, picked an actor they thought would do a good job, and he happened to be black. Okay, if you want to go that way, but I know how, you know, the suits are playing a different game than the average person with, you know, strong sensibilities to plays. But he did, you know, him as the Kingpin for the description of his origin as far as coming up through the streets and fighting his way to the top of the crime world.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go with that, you know, and he was big enough to play the Kingpin.
Yeah.
I'll go with that, you know, and he did a good job with what he had to work with, but the movie just fails on so many other levels.
Yes, it does.
You know, that it just didn't, it doesn't hold up. And I've watched it a couple of times since I saw it in the theater just to kind of go, yeah, no, I was right.
Well, you know, there is a director's cut of the movie that's about 20, 25 minutes longer that rearranges some key scenes.
Oh, yeah?
I read a lot about it. People are, oh, you've got to see the director's cut. It's a completely different movie, and it's so much better. Well, I've seen it. I don't remember anything about it. I'm sorry. It's just, I don't know if it's act or the script or what, but
yeah.
I've seen both versions of the movie, and Joey Pants was...
Yeah, yeah. You know, Affleck, you know, can play, you know, romantic comedy, lighthearted, you know, everyman kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
He just didn't work as Matt Murdock Daredevil at all. It just didn't work.
No.
We'll get to his Batman in a minute. But
if you want to see Affleck do well as a superhero, watch Hollywoodland.
Oh, I've been wanting to see that. Been wanting to see that. But after the Daredevil, what do we got next in the timeline?
Okay, let me see here. After Daredevil, you are jumping up to 2004. You've got The Punisher. That's the one with Thomas Jane.
Okay, which...
The first Spider-Man. That was the same year as Blade 2. But we can lump all the Spider-Man movies together, I guess.
Yeah, we'll put...
And the third Blade movie. Oh, and Catwoman with Halle Berry.
Okay, that doesn't need to be spoke about. Because that was just ridiculous from the concept, from the guy who went, you know what? Let's make a Catwoman movie with Halle Berry. Okay, that was ridiculous to start with. So that doesn't even bear mentioning. The Punisher with Thomas Jane, I didn't see it, but I trust people that did, or people's opinions that I trust did see it, rather. And from what I understand, it was okay, but it wasn't great, and it fell apart. Now, when you get to Punisher Warzone... With Ray? Anyway, Punisher Warzone. They finally made a Punisher movie.
Yeah,
that was really good. But back to let's see. After that, you said the other Spider-Man sequels, is that the last Tobey Maguire movie there?
Yeah, 2004. You got the Spider-Man 2 and Blade Trinity.
Oh, okay, Spider-Man 2, we skipped over that, I think. We started talking about Spider-Man 3. Spider-Man 2 was pretty good. Doc Ock, he was different than the comic, but not so far removed that it wasn't recognizable, and it was still enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
The motivations for the characters were still who they were in the comics, pretty much, and, you know, it was all right for what it was. We already talked about the Spider-Man 3, so we don't need to go into that, which was just a big... you know, cluster Schumacher fest of stuff. After that, now where are we coming as far as we got the X-Men movies out of the way.
So that brings us to 2005, and you've got Batman Begins and the Fantastic Four.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, so, let's go with that.
Pretty good year.
Batman Begins, my opinion of it was, I enjoyed it when I saw it the first time, but then subsequent viewings, it doesn't hold up for me.
I'd go along with that.
You know, it's okay, but it's still not I'm still waiting for a good Batman film that is, for my money, is Batman. It had good stuff in it, but it had a lot of, you know, stuff for the sake of, just the sake of doing it, not to advance the character or anything.
You know, they used the same conceit in Batman Begins as they did in Man of Steel, which is that Bruce and Clark, separately, at some point are going to travel the world to gain knowledge and skills and whatnot. And that works up to a point.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly in the established comic origins, if they haven't changed it too much, just from what I recall, you know, Batman studied criminology, psychology, and he spent some time abroad learning fighting skills.
Yeah.
There you go. I don't recall that from the Superman stuff until Byrne did the revamp where he, you know, spent years traveling in secret and operating in secret before he became, quote-unquote, Superman. But, yeah, that was okay. I could live with that.
Yeah.
I could live with a lot of the stuff that they did. But to me, it's like to sit down and go, well, Batman Begins is good. Dark Knight is much, much better. Dark Knight Returns, I keep waiting for Nolan to give me an actual, you know, part three to his trilogy.
Drop the ball, you say.
Yeah. Well, Bane is just hard to understand.
Was that Bane phoning in there for a second? I mean, not Bane.
That was my attempt at Bane.
Wow. Yeah, pretty much.
Let me explain, Paul Kwan. Well, no one's going to hear it, so go ahead.
Yeah. you go. You know, I haven't seen that yet.
You haven't missed anything.
Yeah, well, that's what I hear. You know, everything I saw about it made me go, eh. And then hearing different people talk about it. I mean, you've got the people who go see the movies who, you know, like Batman, and no matter what it is, if it's Batman comes out, they love it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then you got the super fanboys who are like, well, you know, his cape was a foot longer than that in the comic, so it's, I don't
know. Well,
not
with Todd McFarlane drew it.
The what? Oh,
when
yeah.
McFarlane drew the cape, it was like 35 feet long.
Yeah, you know. And I'm in between the two where, you know, I'm excited when something's coming out. I want to see the mask on the screen, you know. But mm-hmm. if it's so far removed from the source material, it's like, I just can't enjoy it, you know.
Yeah, well,
and the Nolan stuff just isn't, to me, isn't as good as the hype of it. And it doesn't hold up over further viewings. Even the second one, I mean, I liked it okay for what it was, but to me, that wasn't the Joker, not by any stretch of the imagination. I like what he did as a psychotic villain character. I like what he did, but I wish they would have called him something besides a Joker.
Yeah, see, I'll disagree with you on that, but that's just a matter of opinion. I'm looking at the Joker from that movie, and I'm going, well, I can buy that as the Englehart Rogers Joker from the 70s.
Uh-huh.
Really, really, really ramped up.
Yeah.
With a dash of the original Jerry Robinson Joker in it. Not, it's a far cry from Cesar Romero.
Oh, well,
and
yeah,
it,
I mean,
it should be, you know.
That's apples and oranges there, you know.
Yeah, well, that's like fruit salad and hand grenades. Yeah. But, you know, I think Heath Ledger set the, if he hadn't died, Heath Ledger set the bar so high on that thing. And, you know, and a lot of the sympathy and adulation for that movie goes in because he did pass away.
Yeah.
If he had lived, I don't know that it would have been as critically received as it was. But there are things about it that make it not the Joker. You know, the fact that he's wearing makeup and not actually physically disfigured like that. I mean, he's got the scars, but again, it's given the universe in which they chose to operate, you know, and the nice thing about DC is every time they get one of their movies wrong, you can just say, oh, well, that's Earth 74.
Yeah.
Or it's Earth B because Bob Haney, that's why.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's the strongest of the three. Here's what I was going to say is that,
I'll give you that. Yeah.
2012, Avengers and Batman or Dark Knight Returns come out the same year.
Uh-huh.
I got them both on Blu-ray for Christmas.
Uh-huh.
I probably watched the Avengers four times by Valentine's Day.
Uh-huh.
I didn't even take Dark Knight Returns out of the shrink wrap for like 13 months.
Yeah.
I just didn't have any motivation to watch it. When I finally did, I was like, eh.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Do you want to talk about Tim Story's Fantastic Four?
Oh,
well, Fantastic Four Incorporated.
Oh man, okay. You know, talk about straying from the source material.
Mm.
Sue is a scientist working for Doom, who's a corporate guy,
and not
a monarch of Latveria, not a noble, you know, big time global villain guy. Everything has got to be a corporation because corporations are the bad guys in real life. Well, you know, this is a comic book movie, okay? I want comic book villains. Doom was not threatening in the least to me.
No.
And he looked like crap when he and he started to turn into a, you know, metal skin and had electrical powers. What?
I will say the same thing about that movie that I said when it came out. They got Ben and Johnny correct. They got the relationship between Ben and Johnny mostly correct.
Yeah.
If you look at the torch and you like the thing and you ignore everything else, you'll enjoy it. And your kids will like it.
Yeah.
Because it seems geared toward very young kids.
Yeah.
But if you're a Fantastic purist, everything else will just piss you off.
And it did.
Oh, Reed's not smart enough to figure out the thing for the experiment. Now, Reed's not smart enough to come up with unstable molecules. Doom did that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. This is Richards, right?
Yeah. The smartest man in the Marvel Universe, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, and they just, oh, God, they just missed the boat that could have been a really great movie. And I can nitpick and say, okay, the thing looked good, but I didn't like the look of it completely. I didn't like the face, you know? They made him look too human-y without the brow and all that. Okay, then you can say, well, they made him look more like he did in the first couple of issues. Kind of lumpy. Okay, I'll give you that. But all that aside, that nitpicking aside, it just both those movies, the Fantastic Four movies, just weren't good.
Yeah.
They strayed too far from the source material and tried to be, I guess, too stylized. And the Silver Surfer looked cool.
Yes.
But it was a cartoon. I mean, it was all CGI'd, so of course he's going to look cool. He's one color. I mean, you know, he's silver.
Yeah, but, you know, everything you saw in the Surfer, you had seen 15 years earlier in Terminator 2.
Exactly. It wasn't breaking any ground, you know. And then...
And Galactus is a cloud. Ultimate Galactus was a swarm of bugs, if I recall correctly.
Oh, geez.
And people will say, well, you know, it's just like the squid at the end of Watchmen. It would not have worked on the screen. I don't know. If you handle everything up to that moment correctly, yes, it would work.
It would. Yeah, it would. Duh.
I mean, correct me if you saw Guardians of the Galaxy, right?
Yeah, the Eternals?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, my. Yeah, it would have worked.
And wasn't that other thing the head of a celestial?
Yeah.
Okay. So you have two gigantic cosmic beings in that movie. And a talking tree. And a talking raccoon.
Mm-hmm.
But Galactus would not have worked.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, okay, we're done with those. Those were crap.
All right. We could talk about creepy stalker Superman Returns in 2006. Or we can jump right on past him to Ghost Rider.
Well, briefly, that Superman movie failed on so many levels.
Oh!
It's not even funny. The thing it succeeded on was not retelling the origin.
Yeah.
That's one of my biggest pet peeves whenever they do a superhero movie. And even when they start over, they've got to tell the origin again, even mm-hmm. though everybody knows the origin. And the reboots were just a couple years. I mean, the original movie, nowadays, they reboot every 3 years after the original movie or something like that. The second Hulk movie, if you're going to retell the origin, they did it during the opening credits.
Yes.
That was fine. That's all we needed, if you needed a refresher course. But you don't. You know? You just jump in and accept this guy turns green and go. Or God, what movie were we talking about?
Jeez. Superman Returns.
Yeah, Superman Returns. Who doesn't know that Superman, his planet exploded and he came in a rocket to Earth and was raised by humans? Okay. We all know that. Get on with the story. You don't need to retell that every time you do a Superman movie.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, especially because when you look at the DC track record, those movies are, and we'll just gloss over Batman 66 entirely and start with Christopher Reeve.
Yeah.
It's Superman, 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 Batman, Superman, Batman, 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 Superman, Superman, Batman, 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 Superman, Superman versus Batman. Who doesn't know the story?
And even in Superman versus Batman, we get silent, quick retelling of Batman's origin, I think during one of Bruce Wayne's nightmares or something.
Oh.
Yeah. And only because there is one word uttered in that plays a key role in the turning point later in the movie. That's the only reason that scene's in there. Well, I'll tell you, I'll spoil it because this is going to air far enough out. That the movie's been out and gone. During the origin, the comedian is playing Bruce Wayne's father, Thomas Wayne. The guy that played the comedian.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good guy, you know. Anyway, so when they're both laying there on the concrete and Bruce is looking down, Thomas Wayne is looking over towards Martha and he says, "Martha," before they die.
Yep.
Okay. The whole time in Superman versus Batman, Batman is plotting to murder Superman, and then they have the big fight, and then they get to where Batman's got his getting ready to hit him with this kryptonite spear in the chest. He's got his foot on his throat, and the bad guys have kidnapped Martha Kent, and Superman says, "Save her, save Martha." Yeah, so he's there, and he says the word Martha, and Superman says all that, and Lois Lane runs in, and Batman says, "You know, why'd you say that?" And she looks up and says, "That's his mother's name." And that's where Batman flips and thinks Superman's okay and stops trying to kill him. It's just because of that.
Wasn't their mother named Martha?
Yeah. That's the turning point right there. Yeah. I mean, the whole movie, he was like psychotically wanting to murder Superman, and because he wanted to save his mother and her mother's name was Martha. Well, I guess aliens are okay now. But anyway, going back to what were we on up to at this point?
Well, at this point, I think we can safely say let's just cross over into what we can regard as the turning point, and that's Iron Man in 2008.
Yeah.
Because, wow. Dark Knight was also 2008, so we've hit half of that already. But
Iron Man, the first movie, so surprising how good that was. Easily could have been a crap fest. But a lot of that goes, I mean, the special effects look great. The armor looked great.
Yes.
And the fact that the armor changes a lot in the comics, you can get away with changing the armor nuances about it in the movie, long as it is red and gold, you know? But Downey's performance in there, amazing.
Now, some people have complained that movie Tony Stark has comic book Hawkeye's personality, and that's why movie Hawkeye doesn't have one. But, you know, from what I do know of Tony Stark, I'm like, you know, Downey nailed it, and the script writers ought to be congratulated.
Yeah.
It's just Favreau did an awesome job. Just say to take a guy like Iron Man, and Stan will admit that, you know, this was a challenge back in 63. You know, the guy is an arms manufacturer and he's part of the establishment, and how do you make him likable to a generation of kids who might not have bought into that? And, you know, he just is. He just comes across as a genuine guy. And you can say Tony Stark is an asshole. Well, look at the way he treats people. He's mean to Pepper. He's mean to Rhodey. He's really mean to Captain America. But then given, you know, everything that you find out about Tony Stark in that first movie, that he's a child prodigy, think about in the real world, if you're going off to college when you're barely out of your teens, or should I say you're barely into puberty. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody in your peer group is really, really dumb compared to you.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Everybody smart as you is twice your age or more. So you're not going to develop the kind of people skills that make you a super likable person. And Downey portrays that.
Oh, yeah. He nails that personality. And he grows out of it as a character. And, you know, as the movie goes on and in the later movies. But as far as changing things from the source material to the movie screen, I can't think of much they did, really, for Iron Man. No. I mean, they updated the storyline because it couldn't be in Vietnam, taking place today. But other than that, they did a damn good job of doing it.
Yeah, the only major change is he doesn't have to wear the chest plate all the time, but then they gave him the arc reactor instead, so he still has a heart condition.
Yeah.
You know, you give him that palladium poisoning in the second movie and burning through the power cores instead of constantly having to recharge the chest plate, because, let's face it, seeing him with an extension cord running from his armor to a wall outlet would be kind of funny.
Yeah, yeah.
But otherwise, no, it's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, the second movie, you can, you know, people say what they will about it. It was all right. It was good, you know. The third movie, a lot of people didn't like it. It was showing more of the man under underneath the armor. I enjoyed it. The end, a lot of flying armors, a lot of, you know, CGI stuff, and you like it or you don't, you know.
Once you get to Iron Man and come all the way up through Civil War's out, the fact that the Marvel movies are deliberately building on each other so that, you know, when you get to an Iron Man 3 and you go, well, this is a story about a guy who has PTSD from Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's going to lead us directly into Age of Ultron, because Tony is still dealing with the emotional fallout of that, and he's trying to find a way it leads him to create Ultron, right?
Yeah.
Because he wants to put a suit of armor around the world to protect it and not have to go out there and risk his life or his friend's lives on a daily basis. That's the motivation. And there are purists, of course, who are like, well, Hank Pym made Ultron. Yeah, I know, but not in the movie universe. Tony's story is very consistent, and the only way you get from a guy who says in Iron Man 2, I successfully privatized world peace, to a guy who in Civil War wants superheroes to be regulated and controlled by the government is to go through the Ultron project in Age of Ultron.
Yeah, and it's done very well.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, and a lot of the times when they change stuff, it doesn't make sense. But in the context of the story that they have, in mythology they've set up, it, and where the character needs to go, it does make a lot of sense. And it's not that big a change, like making, you know, Yellow Jacket in Ant-Man, which was an enjoyable film, but made Yellow Jacket a bad guy.
Yeah, well, they didn't have him, like, you know, punch Hope in the face or anything.
Yeah, you know. Or, yeah.
Exactly. Like he got a drink in her.
Yeah, or like making, you know, if they were to say, okay, well, you know, War Machine's going to be a chick instead of Rhodey, you know, that would have been a big change. You'd have been like, that's not right, you know. They could have changed a great many things about it. You know, they could have made Tony Stark be an activist for world peace from the get-go.
Yeah.
You know, which wouldn't have been, would have completely changed the character, and it wouldn't have ended up where he is now and gotten the stories we've gotten, you know. And it just wouldn't have been true to the character.
Yeah. So, I also want to point out that between Gwyneth Paltrow in the Iron Man movies and what Deborah Ann Woll has done on the Netflix Daredevil series, this is a huge improvement over the way that Stan wrote women characters in the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because Pepper is more than eye candy and arm candy, and Karen Page is actually an actual positive contributor to Nelson and Murdoch. You're seeing a lot of really good stuff here. And no, you didn't get an Avengers that starts with the Wasp. You got an Avengers that starts with Black Widow. But Black Widow kicks ass.
Yeah, she's a good character, and they set her up in Iron Man. In between those Iron Man films, we had Captain America, First Avenger, which was done incredibly well. And my only faults with that are nitpicky things about the costume, really. And that's just me. But overall, the movie was a lot of fun. It was as faithful as could be to the storyline, except, you know, they changed the Bucky thing around.
Yeah.
But that made sense in the story and the time they had to tell the story.
Yes. And I will also say, like I did about the Hulk, that you notice there's that scene in the First Avenger where the kids are buying the Captain America comic off the newsstand.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So my theory, of course, is that within the context of the cinematic universe, the Captain America comic book is a propaganda tool manufactured by the government through Timely Comics to bolster support for Captain America at home, first because of his War Bonds tour, and then once he actually got into action, they fabricate all these fictitious adventures to, you know, rally the population behind him at home. Now, they couldn't, I won't say they couldn't, but rather than say, well, it's Cap and the Howling Commandos, they said, well, doesn't Cap have a friend named Bucky? What if we made him a kid so he'd be a stand-in for the target audience? There you go. So Bucky in the Captain America comics is a fictional representation of the guy who eventually became the Winter Soldier. So there, and it still works.
Yeah, so there you have it. It worked. And everything, you know, everything about, I think, that movie worked. After that, we had Thor.
We had Thor.
Which was all right. It just didn't...
Thor was always going to be a tough sell.
Yeah.
It's just the nature of the character. You know, people that complain about how tough it is to do a good Superman movie. Well, yeah, but then there's Thor, you know. And
yeah.
I'm surprised, I honestly got to say, I'm surprised that Thor held on as a solo character in his own book for as long as he did, because it's just, I find him, he's a tough character.
Yeah, yeah. I think it would have, first Thor movie just didn't work for me. It felt a lot like a TV movie, insofar as we get him at the beginning, and then for, you know, two-thirds of the movie, we don't have Thor. You know, no costume. No superpowers, which is the way a lot of the TV movies played. And then the last 10 minutes, we get the superhero in the costume and fighting a bad guy.
They did the best they could, I think, with looking at the, you know, all the backstory of Thor. You know, how do we put the Donald Blake thing and the cane and the transformation? And, well, let's just throw that out and rework it in a way that still makes sense. And I think they did an adequate job with Thor.
Yeah, it was adequate. Yeah. It just wasn't all that and didn't feel that. It wasn't that great. You know,
it's a fun movie, and Hemsworth is a likable guy.
Yeah,
and he really carries it.
Yes, he definitely carried it. Yeah,
but it's not a movie that I can watch over and over.
No. It was you know, is a springboard to get him into the universe and get him in the Avengers movie, and you know, it did its job with that. And so after that,
you've got the Avengers and the reboot of Spider-Man and the last Nolan Batman movie. All in the same year, 2012.
So we have the Avengers film, which, I mean, they made all these individual characters. It was unprecedented in having these solo movies and then having these leads who made these solo films come together in an ensemble.
Yeah.
And make
and
the movie work.
There are purists who can nitpick the Avengers and say, well, here are all the things they got wrong. Okay, I'm not one of those guys. You know, I read DC Comics starting in, say, 71, 72.
Yeah.
Up until I finally quit about 10 years ago. And I never really read a lot of Marvel books, but I look at that Avengers movie and I go, you know, this thing is firing on all cylinders.
Uh-huh.
It hits all the positive marks, and it brings these characters together in a workable way. The story doesn't feel clunky.
Exactly.
It doesn't really drag. It hits all the right beat. And then you've got the fun stuff with the Hulk.
Yeah. I mean, anything I've got to say about it is nitpicky stuff that's just on a personal level type thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't ruin the movie for me. I'm not taken out of the movie by any of that stuff.
No.
The characters are pretty true to who they were in the books, you know, overall. And it is a fun movie. It moves along at a good clip, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just well made, you know.
Yeah.
Unlike some other movies. That, you know, we'll gloss over in a sec. Now, we already talked about the last Nolan movie.
Right.
So what comes after that? The second Thor movie?
Well, you've got if you want to talk about the reboot, you've got Iron Man 3 and Man of Steel.
Oh, okay. Now, we talked
about the Thor movie.
Okay, yeah, we talked about Iron Man 3 already.
Yep.
Man of Steel, I don't know if we... I know we talked about that off recording or before we even started, but to say that's a Superman movie...
No,
it's not. It's not the character at all. If anything, Cavill as Superman was the only thing about it in moments that resembled Superman.
Yeah.
About the movie. He had some moments where he was acted kind of like Superman, but overall, it was just a poorly made film.
I read a comment on Facebook just the other day, and I can't attribute it, so, you know, if this guy's listening,
yeah,
claim it. But he said, I took my kids to see Man of Steel. And the oldest, my 7-year-old daughter, he said, first off, all three of my kids walked out within the first 30 minutes.
Wow.
Now, he said, my oldest child, my daughter, who is seven, rationalizes Man of Steel as a good movie if it's about Ultraman. And for those of you who don't know, Ultraman is the evil counterpart to Superman from...
Wow.
Well, it used to be Earth 3, and is it now Earth 2? I don't know.
Something,
I can't keep up,
yeah,
with it. Anyway, she said, she's 7 years old. If it's an Ultraman movie, yeah, it's pretty decent. If it's a Superman movie, it sucks.
Yeah.
Wisdom from a child.
Yeah, I mean, Superman is not a dark and gritty character. You know,
no.
Superman is the beacon of hope. Superman is the moral compass to the rest of the DC universe. The big blue Boy Scout, he's the guy that does right because it's the right thing to do, and he couldn't do it any other way. Because that's not his makeup, you know?
I said earlier, you know, the movie is called Man of Steel. Okay?
Yeah.
Maybe that reflects his powers. This is not the optimistic, smiling man of tomorrow. This is
no.
The xenophobic last son of Krypton. And I don't understand the obsession with, let's make him this. I understand he's the last son of a dead world. Okay.
Yeah.
If you write off the Bottle City Kandor and the Phantom Zone villains and Supergirl and all that kind of stuff, he's the last survivor. Okay, that's sad.
Yeah.
John Jones is the last son of Mars. Okay. That's also sad. And you don't see him, you know, turning this. Oh, jackass. But Superman should not be this dark, brooding, piss and moan, xenophobic character who's all about, oh, my planet's dead.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah.
I don't remember that being the Superman of the Golden Age or the Silver Age.
No, you know why?
Silver Age, yeah.
Because he didn't know anything about Krypton. He has no memories of it. He was raised by the Kents. They told him he's from space. That's the only knowledge he has of being the last son of Krypton is that he was told by his parents that raised him from an infant that he was.
Yeah.
All he knows is growing up in Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a story he was told. It's like, you know, it's like the kid, and I know this to be true, someone I know found out when they were like 18 that one of their parents wasn't their real, we'll say father, their father wasn't their real father. The mother had gotten married, remarried when the 18-year-old was like an infant, but that's the only father she ever knew. Okay, and when she was told this, she was like, okay, so you're my dad,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And that's the way Superman is, you know? This is the only life he's ever known. He wouldn't be so emo about being the last son of Krypton. He has nothing to miss.
Well, if I may jump back into the past.
Yeah.
This is one of the many problems that I have with the first Chris Reeve movie in 78. Okay, that, you're going to go off to the Arctic and use this magic crystal to make the Fortress of Solitude, and then you're going to spend 12 years in isolation with no one to talk to but this AI hologram of Jor-El. And let me just say, it's Jor-El, not Jor-El.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Kal-El, not Kal-El.
Yeah.
So he ends up with 12 years of complete isolation because he's 18 when he leaves and he's 30 when he comes back to Metropolis. 12 years of being indoctrinated by a computer. When he comes back to Metropolis, he falls hard for the first woman he sees, Lois Lane, who, and this is not a knock on Margot Kidder, but the character as written isn't that attractive. She can't spell rapist. She's a chain smoker. She treats Clark like crap.
Yeah.
Okay.
What is he attracted to?
I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's what being, you know, 12 years in isolation at the North Pole does to you. And that's the interpretation of Superman that Hollywood keeps coming back to. It's just, oh, well, he's lost his planet and he's sad and he's mopey and, you know, he's not really human.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, this is not the Superman I want to see.
No.
Like I said before, you know, there are plenty of analog characters out there that you can tell that story about, whether it's Hyperion or Mr. Majestic or even Icon.
Yeah, or even, Supreme. You know, even Batman.
Yeah.
He watched his parents get gunned down in front of him as a child. You know, Superman should be the exact opposite as far as outlook on life than Batman, you know. But Batman, each telling of him on the screen, he's dealt with it and moved on. It's still his prime motivation, you know. But yeah, God, oh, Man of Steel was just, it was, it, so, and changing the costume, Superman's iconic costume.
Oh.
Why? Why change it?
Oh, I don't know.
I mean, who thought that was a good idea?
The YouTube video, What If Man of Steel Had Been Shot in Color?
Exactly. Yeah. It was, the editing was choppy. The color, that dreary look to the whole thing, it was not a pleasant film, you know. And God, you know, and destroying all of Metropolis, and the character Superman would not have done that. He would have taken a fight outside of Metropolis, anything he could do to get them to leave Metropolis and fight, and they would have followed him. Yeah, they would have followed him to fight out in the desert because they wanted to kill him. They didn't care about the city, so, you know, there's no argument there.
No.
Moving right along. What do we have next?
Do you want to talk about the Thor sequel? But well,
not really.
Winter Soldier or Days of Future Past or Guardians?
Winter Soldier, real quick. Everybody says that was such a great movie. And I think if it was called The Downfall of S.H.I.E.L.D., it would have been a great movie.
Yeah.
But the Winter Soldier was barely in it, and Captain America was barely in it. So I liked it okay, but I don't like it as much as everybody else did.
Yeah, well, I'm one of those persons. I mean, that's the one I can watch over and over. I don't know if it's because it has that 70s political thriller vibe, and Robert Redford does a lot for that.
Oh, yeah, he was great,
you know,
casting.
You know. It doesn't feel like an isolated standalone issue of Captain America, but it feels very much like that entire run from where in the early 70s when Cap is fighting, what is it, the Secret Empire?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
When he finds out that the top guy, they can't say this, but they highly imply that the top guy is Richard Nixon.
Yeah.
So basically, the president of the United States is in charge of Hydra.
Yeah.
More or less. And had the disillusionment that follows that. I mean, if you look at that as a very broad character arc of Captain America from, say, 70, 71 up until about, you know, 82 or so.
Yeah.
Yeah, Winter Soldier works. I can understand your objections.
Yeah.
But,
well, I mean, no, it works. It works. It definitely works. I just think I don't know, I think maybe the Winter Soldier could have been a movie by itself, and the Downfall of S.H.I.E.L.D. could have been a movie by itself.
Yeah.
Or they could have introduced the Winter Soldier in this, but, you know, closer towards the end, and have him trail off and, you know, be in the next movie instead of calling this the Winter Soldier, and all the hype and the advertising went towards the conflict between Steve and the Winter Soldier instead of, you know, the big thing was the Downfall of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra.
Well, you know, the other gripe about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I think especially for the Phase 2 films, is that they basically all have to carry water for each other and for the overall plot point, because it's a Captain America movie, but it has to deal with the Downfall of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is going to provide a breath of fresh air for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and we have to talk about getting Bucky out there so that we can prep the next thing. And it's, you know, like the second Thor movie had to have an Infinity Stone in it just to prompt.
Yeah.
You know, because let's not forget that, you know, ever since the first Avenger, the overall plot has been, let's get Thanos on screen.
Yeah.
And have the Infinity War. And so each of these movies has to devote about a third of its real estate to continuing that story. And sometimes they handle it well and sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
So you've got that as a drawback.
Yeah. Now, as far as changing things from the books to the screen, Winter Soldier, Bucky as Winter Soldier was pretty faithful.
Yeah.
In look and in attitude, motivation, and all that. The rest of it, like you say, it kind of resembles that Secret Empire stuff from the 70s, so that was kind of cool.
But you had Best Box the Leper.
Oh. Okay.
And he's actually, oh, man.
Yeah, at least they gave him a little bit of nod with the purple and the orange shirt, kind of. Mm-hmm. But I don't understand. Okay, one, Cap's shield outfit, the super soldier suit.
Stealth operations.
Yeah, I don't get that, and the shield changing the color of the shield. That I could gripe about all day long. But when he goes to fight Batroc and he throws the shield down and then he takes his mask off, why?
Yeah, I don't understand why he took the mask off.
It made no sense. But anyway, that's nitpicking aside.
Dr. Zola. Dr. Zola was not the crazy TV head mounted cyborg robot that, you know.
yeah, they give a nod and a wink to that with his face on the screen, but you know.
Yeah.
All that aside, it was an enjoyable movie for what it was. What was the next one coming up?
Days of Future Past or Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, okay. Well, Days of Future Past. For me, it was fun. Oh, we didn't talk about First Class, though.
No, we skipped First Class.
Okay, well, First Class was good. They changed things because all the X-Men movies are a jumble anyway of different time and continuity. But for my money, it was the most fun of all the X-Men movies.
Technically, now Havoc is old enough to be Cyclops' father instead of his brother.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. They can't be. They can't be related.
No.
So that aside, you know, it was. And the Beast, who, you know, the Beast has got to be in his 70s by now, but he's a mutant, so you know. But
First Class was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was fun. It was an enjoyable, fun movie, and because they've already jumbled up the characters and put them in different places, this one didn't bother me as much as it could have, you know. And hey, Kevin Bacon sold it as a smarmy villain, you know. Even though he wasn't the Sebastian Shaw from the comics, man, he was just a smarmy, just sleazy bad guy, you know.
Oh, he was great.
He was
Fassbender. Awesome as Magneto.
Oh yeah, it was a good, you know, enjoyable film. Now you get to go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say, Magneto has been the villain in all the X-Men films.
Uh-huh.
And look at how well Magneto has been treated on screen versus characters that arguably should have more stature in their respective universes, Lex Luthor and Doctor Doom.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Magneto got it. I mean, you know, that's beautiful work. And the other two, just horrible.
Yeah. So I don't know why they did that, what the reasoning behind that is, but you're right that Fassbender as Magneto was fantastic, and the character gets treated with a lot of respect, and what changes they made still is the character.
Yes.
Pretty much. But Luthor, they just haven't made him correctly yet. Why? I mean, who knows why?
I don't know, but of the three of them, you know, relatively speaking, Magneto is the youngest villain.
Yeah.
Luthor had a lot more, twice as much time to be as established as Magneto, and Doom. Doom is widely regarded as the villain of the Marvel Universe. I don't understand why they're that hard to write.
I don't know, because, you know, the animated shows, which we, you know, we're not really getting into, but you look at Luthor in the animated Superman show, the most recent one, and then the Justice League, boom, there's Luthor.
Yeah.
You know, they can't get it right live action.
Don't understand it.
Yeah. But anyway, Days of Future Past.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't resemble the comic arc in Days of Future Past in the least.
Right.
For the X-Men universe, to me, we didn't talk about the Wolverine movies either. Well, we'll lump them in with the X-Men.
Well, you already know. The hair's wrong. They shaved his chest. He's too tall and he dies.
Yeah. And the first movie had, you know, characters that didn't look like anything like they did. I mean, they had Deadpool was in there, but you couldn't tell it was Deadpool.
Yeah.
You know, it's a thing. Like I said, at a glance, you look at the poster and it's just a bunch of actors standing there.
Mm-hmm.
There's no characters there. So it's a fail. But Days of Future Past, a big movie, tried to fix a lot of things that they screwed up in the previous two X-Men movies, not First Class. Fixed some things, but of all the questions it answered, it asks more.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a long thing to get into. And I'm not going to do it right now because that's a whole, that could be a whole podcast. But anybody out there listening doesn't understand, go back and watch it again. It had a lot of good moments in it, but it kind of messed up the timeline, even though it fixed it in a way. We'll see what Apocalypse does. I think that's supposed to jump back and forth through time from what I understand. Yeah, it was just not my favorite of the movies, but probably maybe my second favorite of the X-Men movies.
Well, I think it just underscores the thing, and part of it is because Hugh Jackman is a likable actor, but Wolverine is what sells these things. And they've bought into we can't do this without Wolverine to the extent that he's got to be the featured character. And he has the cameo in First Class, right? He gets to drop the F-bomb in a PG-13 movie because he's that important.
Yeah.
Right? So that's all I'm going to say about Wolverine.
Yeah. So after Days of Future Past, I mean, it's hard to really say anything about that as far as changing from the book to the screen because it's a time travel movie, and it's dealing with the events that have been set up in the previous movies that we've already talked about, what's been changed.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, what do we have?
Guardians.
Okay, Guardians, from what I understand, now, my only knowledge of the Guardians of the Galaxy is the 70s Guardians. You know, Vance Astro, Charlie 27, you know, those guys. I didn't read any of the new Guardians book, but from what I understand, this really did capture the flavor of the new book.
That's what I understand.
And going in to see it without any knowledge like that, I enjoyed the hell out of it. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, of course, you have the whole thing revolved around the Infinity Stone, really, in this one. So it wasn't shoehorned in there for this one.
Correct.
And I'm looking forward to Guardians 2. You know, hopefully we'll get more Howard the Duck in that one.
Well, you know, the rumor is they're going to try to get Kurt Russell in it to play Star-Lord.
Oh, yeah, which will be awesome.
Oh, completely awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, same with you. I heard Guardians movie, and I'm like, really? Because I don't know that Martin X and Yondu can carry a film. And then it turned out to be, you know, completely different set of characters. And I went into it blind. I tell you, the thing that impressed me the most, particularly having seen so many bad films in the 80s that starred Hulk Hogan, is the job that Dave Bautista did as Drax.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, here's a guy, professional wrestler, so excited about being in the movie, goes to take some acting lessons.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there's that one sequence there on Nowhere after Yondu has taken, after Star-Lord and Gamora are gone, right?
Uh-huh.
And so it's just Drax and Groot and Rocket in a scene.
Uh-huh.
Which means it is two guys in green body suits and Dave Bautista. And Vin Diesel and Bradley Cooper are doing voiceover work.
Oh, yeah.
Which is probably going to be dubbed in later, correct?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So here's a guy who's, you know, a professional wrestler, not an actor, has to carry that entire scene by himself.
That's right, yeah.
Essentially. And he does an excellent job.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, to get away from the stereotype that these guys are just big, stupid, muscle-headed morons, you know, The Rock has also done some good movies. But, you know, if you saw any of that shit that... Any of that shit that Hogan did.
Oh, God.
It's a far cry from that. And I'm very proud of Dave Bautista, I'll say that.
Well, you know, he made a likable character.
Yes.
You know.
Plus, have you heard the story of because Drax doesn't understand metaphors. He's very literal.
Yeah.
There was the kid in the audience. He was autistic. He said, he's just like me.
Mm.
You know, so instantly
awesome.
Drax is the hero of autistic children because... He takes everything literally,
like
many of them do, which is an awesome thing.
You know, that's cool.
A personal hero in the movie. So.
Yeah.
So, Age of Ultron?
Age of Ultron was a great comic book movie.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was another one that hit on all cylinders. And with that many characters, being able to pull it off and do it well, I mean, it's a credit to, it's Joss Whedon. He handles a lot of characters at one time. Good. They pull the bait and switch where they give Hawkeye a background and a family and a backstory, and you're like, oh, they're going to kill off Hawkeye. And then they kill off Quicksilver, who they just introduced.
Oh, yeah.
I think that was done well because I wasn't expecting that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I do like, It was fantastic. Even though they changed his look quite a bit, it was amazing to see the Vision on screen finally. Yes. And the guy playing Vision, I thought he did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
It was great for you got one shot, one scene of them all fighting with Cap's Kooky Quartet, the second Avengers lineup together on screen.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it was kind of hard, it took me a second. It was gone before I realized that's what it was, you know, because they're not in the costumes that are right, you know, and Cap didn't have his mask on, so I couldn't tell it was Cap. I thought it was just Chris Evans up there. But
if I had one complaint about Age of Ultron, and I blame Fox for this because of the stupid rights issue, it's that Days of Future Past got the good Quicksilver.
Yeah.
And that's not a slam on the actors, but Days of Future Past Quicksilver is fun, and Age of Ultron Quicksilver is kind of a stiff.
Yeah. But, you know, he kind of was in the comics, though.
Yeah.
From what I remember. But as far as on screen, the other guy was more likable.
Yes. And that's the studios. That's all that rights issue and whatnot.
Yeah.
So it's no fault to the actors or the writers or anything like that. No fault to Joss's.
But how about Spader there as Ultron?
Yeah, I got to say that, you know, when people rave, ooh, they got James Spader. You know, I didn't watch whatever that show was that he was in with Shatner.
Yeah, I only saw bits and pieces. I never sat down and watched it.
Okay, so when I hear James Spader, I have to go all the way back to...
Less Than Zero, Pretty in Pink?
Yes, thank you. Less Than Zero and Pretty in Pink. Because I'm going, is it Pretty in Pink? No, it's... it is Pretty in Pink. Yeah. And that's what I remember James Spader from, and I know he's done lots of other stuff since then.
Oh, yeah.
But wasn't it in that Cronenberg movie about the crash?
Oh, yeah.
The people, you know, get off on bodily injury as a sexual... fetish.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, okay, so they got the guy from Pretty in Pink to be the villain. What? So I cannot speak with any authority about how amazing James Spader is, but I did think Ultron was a great character.
Yeah, you know, when I heard he was doing it, I was like, I don't know. And then it wasn't the voice that I pictured Ultron when I read the comics, you know. I never would have thought that voice, but he made it work, and he did give Ultron some personality.
So many funny little moments. Really, Quinn cuts off Claw's arm, and he goes, "Oh, I'm sorry, that'll grow back, won't it?" Like, he really doesn't know.
Just,
ooh. And it's funny, you know. It's like Thor beating up Loki in the first Avengers movie. It's just, you know, that's funny. Clever little moments like the contest to pick up Thor's hammer, and Cap makes it wiggle, and you get that look on Thor's face, and then he can't pick it up, and Thor relaxes and grins.
Cool little moments like that, where, you know, really made the movie.
Mm-hmm. And the choreography for all those group fight scenes is really impressive.
Oh yeah, it was.
In fact, you're making me want to put the movie in and watch it soon as we finish up.
Yeah, you know, I'm gonna have to watch that again soon too. Now after that, what do we got?
Ant-Man. It was the heist movie.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It wasn't a character that has a lot of. I mean, he does have a lot of baggage, but he's not a major character, and he's changed so much over the years that he didn't have a lot of. He doesn't have an iconic status like a lot of other characters do. So, and they were taking two different Ant-Man's characters, people who were Ant-Man, and putting them into one movie. And I think they did a good job of it.
I find it very enjoyable.
Yeah, fitting it into the cinematic Marvel universe. It was a lot of fun. And, I look forward to seeing him more in the Marvel movies. And Michael Douglas was great. When I first heard he was going to be Hank Pym, I was like, oh, geez, man, come on, you know. And I do like Michael Douglas. But when the movie came out, I was like, okay, I get it now. You know,
and again, for all the purists out there who are like, Hank Pym created Ultron, if Ant-Man had come out first, if you know Edgar Wright had kept the movie and kept on the same schedule and everything else had been the same, Ant-Man comes out first and Ant-Man makes it into the Avengers movie. What is the motivation for Hank Pym to create Ultron? Because in the comics, it wasn't at all part of his whole. I mean, he was Ant-Man, and then he felt inadequate compared to Iron Man and the Hulk and Thor, so he became Giant Man.
I think so, yeah.
And then he stops being Giant Man, and he's Goliath. Then he lets Hawkeye be Goliath while he goes off and does something else, creates Ultron. And then he comes back, and he's Yellowjacket. And, you know, I still see it makes a lot more sense character-wise for Tony to have created Ultron as part of his PTSD rehab, and Ant-Man to just, you know, be over here on the side and then gradually integrated into it.
And Stark's desire to privatize world peace and, you know, and to protect everybody. Yeah, it does make a lot more sense. And, you know, I don't have a problem with that because it really does work for the characters in the movie. I think my big problem with when they change things is when they change things that don't matter, that they change them. Why change them then?
Exactly.
You know,
and that comes back to the rules I probably mentioned in part one, where be faithful to the source material, be accessible to a wide audience, and tell a good story. Things that don't need to be look, if your broad audience doesn't know anything about the characters anyway, then what's the harm in adhering to the source material?
Yeah.
You make the fanboys happy, the other people don't know or care.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's like I said over and over, I tell people when I, you know, they argue, well, that's got to be, they're doing it more realistic. I'm like, look, long as you slap Batman on the title or Avengers on the title or whatever, people are going to, if it put Marvel on the title or DC, the general populace is going to go see the movie.
Well, here, I'll give you a perfect example of that. Let's go back to Ang Lee's Hulk.
Uh-huh.
And unless this is a rights problem between, you know, because the character also hung out with Cap and he, you know, he's instrumental in the early adventures of the Avengers.
Yeah, uh-huh.
In Ang Lee's Hulk, you know, you've got Bruce, not Banner, some fake name, and Betty Ross and that other lab guy working on these nanomeds that are activated by gamma rays, right?
Uh-huh.
Nanobots. Why is that guy not Rick Jones? You know, and little things like that, okay? That would have been a nice shout-out to the fans, but they don't do it.
Yeah. You know, and little things like that, why even change it? I mean, you know, when going back and changing characters' ethnicities or for no reason except to do it, or even changing the character's sex, which I don't think they've done that yet.
Not yet.
Battlestar Galactica did it, but I don't know.
Yeah, right.
I just don't get things like that other than it's a stunt move or it's a look how progressive we are move.
Yeah, because if it doesn't hurt anything about the story, I'm okay with it, you know?
Yeah.
Michael Clark Duncan as the Kingpin, you know, it's not the same character, but it doesn't invalidate anything about the Daredevil story, so I can let it go.
Yeah.
But if you say, well, and this seems so much of a nitpick compared to that, but we can't have the Punisher when it was Dolph Lundgren, can't have the Punisher wear the costume because it's too comic booky. Well, what was the point?
Yeah, exactly. Why even make the movie then? Why don't you just call it, you know, Dolph Lundgren, the movie, or whatever?
Well, what was the story, the apocryphal story, I guess, that Stallone, Beverly Hills Cops, there was originally supposed to be a movie for Stallone.
Oh.
And his ideas conflicted with what the studio wanted to do, so they rewrote it as a comedy and got Eddie Murphy, and Stallone took his ideas and went off and made Cobra.
Wow.
I think that's the story.
Wow.
And those are two radically different films.
Oh, yeah.
But you look at it and you go, well, okay, again, if they spring from a common point, look at how far they diverged.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you come to a comic book movie with that approach that, all right, why do we even bother with the Superman from Krypton if we're just going to make them in this mopey, you know, guy? Let's make Tony Stark have nothing to do with weapons. Let's just make him an alcoholic. Well, if you're an alcoholic superhero, you know, you don't have to go with Iron Man.
Yeah, exactly.
There's probably somebody else out there who's crawled inside of a bottle.
Well, they did that with Hancock.
Thank you.
You know,
they
made up a hero. They made up a story. And, you know, it was a pretty good story for what it was. And it was different and unique. And they didn't have, you know, there you go. You got a strong black superhero character that's not riding on the coattails of already established mythology. And, you know, actually, it was pretty damn good movie. It just did not have the name value that a Marvel or DC character did. Because it's an original character. Yeah, Unbreakable.
M. Night Shyamalan's Unbreakable, which hits a lot of the right beats. It's slow and kind of mopey, but, you know, that's sparks of his storytelling style.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of being a good comic book type movie, Unbreakable is great.
Yeah.
Would it have... It would not have worked as a Superman movie.
No,
but
no.
It works as a movie for that type of character.
Yeah. You know, and it worked in all the things that it did and with having no costume and none of that kind of stuff because it was an original work.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't saying, okay, we're going to do Mon-El, the movie. but he's going to wear a hoodie and a cloak and not have a costume and, you know, and changing everything about it, but just using that name value. Like, you know, they've gotten better about it over the years. I mean, they're getting closer with a lot of, like, the Marvel stuff. Most of that is, I think, what we've touched on is nitpicky stuff, and especially, you know, costume-wise. Still don't understand the decisions they make and why in each Avengers movie, Cap's costume is getting less red, white, and blue and more darker and monotone.
Yeah, I don't know. Unless it's a thematic thing that they're going to come down to that has a lot to do with how disillusioned Cap is becoming.
Could be. I still don't understand, though, why the stripes on his abdomen now look like zigzags and not straight stripes.
Yeah. I don't have an answer for that one.
I'll give the darker color being hit how, like you said, the disillusionment as it goes on. And maybe he'll come out the other end, unless they are going to kill him off like they did in the comics and have that be the end of Chris Evans' run. I don't know. Yeah. That remains to be seen.
I would hate to see that, but it's entirely a possibility.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
But not everybody is going to make it through Infinity War.
Oh, no. Because like Superman said in Kingdom Come, but you can't have a war without people dying.
True. But, you know, you have to look at, you know, the movies. We should really be thankful for this as a golden age between the big budgets and the wonderful technology. I'm a fan of CGI if it's used properly. It's another tool in the toolbox.
If it's used properly,
If you use it poorly, then it's just like a guy in a bad rubber suit or a guy with crappy makeup.
Exactly.
Or being able to see the strings with the puppets. Okay. Yeah. But if it's used properly, this is a golden age, right? Uh-huh. We are getting some awesome, awesome movies, but these actors are not going to stay young forever.
Yeah.
It takes a long time to churn out the next chapter in the overall story.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to get bored eventually. And, you know, yeah, Robert Downey Jr. is making a crap ton of money. But at some point you say, I want to do something else. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you end the story, you're either going to have to kill everybody off, which would be bad, or you do a reboot and replace them with other actors, which is going to feel unsatisfying. Or you just say, look, this is the end of the road with these guys, and you have a ride off into the sunset like in Star Trek VI, and you say, enjoy it. It was a good run. Sit down with your DVD player and have at it, but we're not going to make any more.
Yeah.
And I would rather see that than, well, we're going to have to kill off Cap, and we're going to have to kill off this guy, and we're going to have to, you know, maim Hawkeye, and Black Widow's going to be blinded, and Hulk's going to be in a wheelchair. Bullshit.
Well, you know, I would I'd like to see the write-off in the sunset and enjoy it for what it was. Mm-hmm. And then if they're going to make new movies, okay, in a few years, you can either start over or continue completely new cast. Mm-hmm. But it's enough years between it that, okay, you can say, okay, they've grown a little bit. That's why they look different. You know what I mean? And just accept that as your suspension of disbelief and keep on going.
You do that, or you know, play the long game and say, look, you know, we have lots of other characters, and if we handle them right, you can grow to love them the way you grew to love these characters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a risky proposition, because you're basically saying the B team or the C team has got to carry the future. When you're like, well, you know, we deliberately didn't put Green Lantern in the Justice League movie because we want Cyborg. Well, that's a relatively newer character.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Maybe you can get some more mileage out of him while people forget the Ryan Reynolds Green Lantern movie. Do you want to talk about Deadpool, or are we about done here?
So Deadpool, real quick, we'll go. I mean, it was fantastic. It was close to the book. It mm-hmm. looked like the book. It looked like a comic book movie. It was well done overall. Not being a Deadpool fan or reading the book, though, I'm drawing mm-hmm. my conclusion there as far as being close to the book from what I've heard. Everybody who's read the book that I've talked to said it was phenomenal. You couldn't have done any better. And even going in without the knowledge of the character, it was a fantastic movie.
Yeah, that's pretty much the exact same opinion I have. So
yeah, I mean, the pacing, everything, the action was good. It was fun.
Do you remember the fake ad campaign where, you know, the guy basically, the story is that he sold his girlfriend and gone to it because for Valentine's Day. It's a story about, you know, a guy and the lengths he goes to win back the heart of his girl that he lost, you know, because something. And she's like, oh, that sounds so wonderful, because it sounds like a Lifetime movie.
Yeah.
And then you get theater and it's fucking Deadpool.
Yeah. That was awesome.
But everything that he said is true, because that's what it is.
Yeah.
It just happened to be this Deadpool movie.
Yeah. And, you know, and it was. So Deadpool being the gold star as far as
authenticity
and staying true to the source material. Mm-hmm. And then you get to, we got Batman versus Superman, which is too much to go into right now. Give it a watch if you get a chance at some point. I'm not going to suggest you pay for it, but it's what it is. And that's another talk for another time.
Yeah.
But I'd say overall, I think, you know, we haven't really drawn the comparison between the TV movies or the 70 early movies and the later movies as far as what they changed and why they changed it. But I think we've brought it out.
Yes.
Throughout the conversations. And it's been fun.
Oh, I've had a blast. I don't know if anybody is actually going to enjoy sitting through 4 hours of podcast here, but...
Yeah,
but, I've had a very good time.
I'm gonna sit back with Phyllis when she edits this and see how it goes. But yeah, it's been a blast, and we will have to do it again and maybe pick a less broad a topic to talk about.
Yeah, I think we could probably just talk about Aunt May in one movie. Sally Field versus who played Aunt May for the Raimi films. I don't know, wonderful actress.
Exactly. Yeah.
And we'll just talk about her for an hour.
Right on. Right on. Sounds good. Well, until next time, everybody, I hope you're still listening. drop us a line at phantasmoad@gmail.com or on the Facebook page for Phantasmo After Dark. Let us know what we're doing right or wrong, or if you liked it or if you didn't, or just say hi. And once again, I want to thank Sam for joining me. It's been a blast catching up and talking comic book stuff.
Woo!
And hopefully we'll do this again soon. So good night, everybody.
Good night.